When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It felt like they were like someone was trying really hard to film a really gritty episode of EastEnders, and they've ended up with this.
Every time I watch it, I feel like I start off hating it. By the end, I'm kind of like, yeah, maybe like aristocracy is bad.
Russell Crowe, Hugh Jackman, Sacha Baron Cohen, Anne Hathaway, Eddie Redmayne, Amanda Seyfried, Helena Bonham Carter. Like, there's a big cast. None of them can sing.
But when he kills himself,
it's really funny.
It's really funny.
Hello, everyone. Joining Flixwatter today, we have Sam.
Hello.
Josh.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking Les Mis.
Thank you, as always, to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening. This is FlixWatcher Podcast, and our guests today are Sam and Josh. If you could please say hello and tell the listeners a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm one half of the Truly Happily Madison podcast, a podcast dedicated to the entire filmography of Happy Madison Productions from 1999 to current day, which I co-host with Jack Gregson. We've got another film coming out soon as we finished our initial run of the first 47 films of Adam Sandler's IV. But yeah, stay tuned. We'll have another one coming up soon.
Is Happy Gilmore actually a Happy Madison production?
No.
Or does that come afterwards? Yeah.
The first one is Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
It's a shame because, I mean, most people cite Happy Gilmore as the best Adam Sandler-generated comedy.
Yeah.
And you're missing out on that.
There's no comedies in Happy Madison productions, but yeah, they try their best.
You're suffering for your art.
Exactly. And for listener enjoyment.
What was that one that when he signed that deal on Netflix where he plays a Native American? Is that one of them?
Yeah, no, that's one of them. Yeah. The Ridiculous Six. Yeah.
Yeah. I made it about 20 minutes into that. So what's the rest of it like?
Oh, it's good. Tell you what, he's very clever, Adam Sandler, because he likes to make the first 20 minutes of all his films really terrible, and then they become, you know, incredible works of dramatic genius. Yeah, go back. Absolutely can't go back.
I watched one on Netflix, Murder Mystery. That was really good. Like, that was a good Adam Sandler film. Like, actually good.
It's solid. I think they've got a sequel coming up as well.
Oh, okay. I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
What about Hubie Halloween? Is that Happy Madison?
That is, yeah. Basically, all the Netflix Andy Samberg, Adam Sandler films are, yeah, they're all, apart from Uncut Gems, etc., all the like comedy ones, which Uncut Gems could be. Anyway, yes, sorry.
So, Meyerowitz Stories, we've had on here. We've had Uncut Gems, both we think are good films.
Neither.
Not Happy Madison, so won't feature on your podcast. Shame. Who are you on the other side?
I'm Sam Clement. I host a podcast all about under 90-minute films called the 90 Minutes or Less Film Fest, We have done zero Adam Sandler films so far. I don't know if he's done an under 90-minute film. Maybe a Hotel Transylvania.
Eight Crazy Nights. Oh, okay.
Eight Crazy Nights, I think, is 88 minutes or something.
Okay.
And isn't the Paul Thomas Anderson one?
Oh, no, it's like annoying. It's like 94 minutes. It's okay. It's really, there's doing the podcast, a lot of people do suggest films that are like 91, 92. I get it. I see the logic. Do the credits count? It's the eternal question. But I want the back of the DVD or the Netflix listing to say 90 minutes or less, please. That's the qualifier. So yeah, sadly not. But that's good to know that there is a potential Adam Sandler film that we can talk about on the show. We'll see if anyone picks that.
No problem. I'm sure that works.
If only there was an Adam Sandler expert. I spend a lot of my time talking about under 90-minute films, but I also do a podcast all about Nancy Meyers' very over 90-minute film, The Holiday, also as a bit of an offshoot, because I love Christmas movies, and The Holiday, not only the best Christmas movie ever made, but one of the greatest films ever made, and it's nice to dedicate some time to that every Christmas, doing a couple of episodes each year.
Well, yeah. It's a lovely watch, a lovely listen. We're here talking today about Les Mis, which is your choice, Sam. Can you tell us first of all why you chose it, and then we'll get the timer for the synopsis in 60 seconds or less.
I don't quite know why I chose this film. I think I was in a mood for a musical, and Netflix doesn't, whilst it has an incredible library of films, doesn't have a lot of musicals on. But I thought Les Mis, it's a classic musical. It's been around for a little while. And this film, when it came out, was really hyped, won lots of awards. And I remember watching it at a sold out screening at my local cinema, and people going crazy for it. And I thought it's time to revisit to see if it holds up on the Netflix.
And the synopsis timer starts now.
I was dreading this. I'm going to wear down the clock by just talking about my psychology behind it. This film is all plot. Like, it's a heck of a lot of plot. So I'm going to give it a go. Basically, there's two guys, right? Two buddies, two bros. They're not. They hate each other. It's Jean Valjean, played by Hugh Jackman, Wolverine himself. He's a prisoner. He's freed by Javert, who's played by Russell Crowe, who's something in this movie. He's a police officer or a police inspector, and they kind of have this drawn-out relationship over the years. Jean Valjean becomes a mayor. He owns a factory. He adopts a child. Russell Crowe's following him around like Snoopy, and it ends in a nice big sing-song in the street in Greenwich. I think that's about the plot.
Yeah, I think that's what Tom Hooper and Hugo, whatever his name is.
Victor Hugo. Yeah, no, that's exactly what Victor Hugo said to his publisher when he pitched it.
Yeah. What's the synopsis?
This film is just so much plot. Oh, it goes on.
Yeah, there's probably like four lines of dialogue which is spoken properly. And that, I know, puts a lot of people off. Does it put you guys off? Helen, you said sing your dialogue.
There's a lot of singing in this. There's like 2 hours and 37 minutes of singing. This is a lot. I haven't seen the stage. I don't really have any. This is my only entry point into Les Mis. And there's a lot of close-ups. That's one thing. Like, if you're a director and you think, right, musical, something that happens on stage, where how can I bring the wonders of pure cinema and make it the best experience ever on screen, I'm just going to do loads of really close-ups of people's faces. Yes. That's it. For a long time.
It reminds me so much of, what is that film? The Revenant. Like, the shaky cam, like, fisheye that they keep sticking into, like, Russell Crowe's haggard face is just, it's wonderful.
I think it was hard to be French at that time. I mean, no one's French in it, are they?
It's hard to be French.
There definitely is like a, I think in the 2010s, there was this sort of Revenant aesthetic, you're right, where people, everything was like quite grey and brown, and there was like one colour that might be sort of, like, it's blue in this film, like they'll pick out the blues in the grade, and they're trying to make it look really gritty and lived in. But then also, like, it's supposed to be a little, you know, it's supposed to be a musical, and it sort of feels like the way it's shot is really counteracting that stagey kind of experience that you're supposed to have. It felt like they were, like, someone was trying really hard to film a really gritty episode of EastEnders, and they've ended up with this.
I think, I mean, I don't mind the close-ups, because I think the difference between I think it's actually taking advantage of the medium, because some of my favorite shots in cinema history are when like you zoom in close on people's faces, you can really see them like thinking, and it can do that. And I think some of the criticism of this version of Anne Hathaway's version of Fantine when she's singing "I Dream a Dream," because she's not on the stage, she really belts it out. You see Susan Boyle, she really belts it out in front of that X Factor or whatever it was that she did it. But Anne Hathaway's version, she's like, because that story is like, that song is like really sad, but and because she can be really close in on the, she can actually sing it in a way that makes sense to the song. Mm. So I actually quite liked the choices that they made in some cases. But I know that sometimes when the camera's right in Sacha Baron Cohen's face and he's moving along at like 20 miles an hour, then I can understand why that's a bit like, what's going on here exactly? And you don't have an orientation of where they are in the scene. But I think sometimes, yeah, when for that one scene in particular, I thought it was really appreciated being close on Hathaway's face and her singing a lot more softly than the stage version. I have seen it on stage. Has anyone else seen it on stage?
No. No, the film was my...
It's like you're thinking, have I seen it on stage? No.
I feel like I should, because it's one of those really long-running shows, you know, that's always incredibly popular, and they have some high-profile casting from time to time, and all sorts. I think just before the pandemic, there was a spin-off show on stage, which was just the songs. It's all songs. which was just the songs of a celebrity cast, including Matt Lucas and a bunch of people, Alfie Bow, and things. Mm. So, and it was in the theatre next to Les Mis, which is really odd. I think Les Mis was closed for renovations, so they sort of did like the greatest hits next door. But yeah, I feel like I should. As someone who lives in London, it feels like I'm losing London points by not having seen Les Mis.
Yeah, it does feel like a rite of passage.
I think it's one of those things that's like Rock Horror Picture Show. It's like on somewhere at all times. And if Rock Horror Picture Show isn't on at a cinema or this isn't on in a theatre, then something's wrong with the world. Yeah.
Ooh, I haven't seen the show, but I have seen star of the film Hugh Jackman's one-man show at the O2, where it's like an audience of Hugh Jackman and he sings some of his greatest hits, including a couple of songs from Les Mis, mostly songs from The Greatest Showman, but a couple of songs from Les Mis and a few other things.
I was there that night. You were there.
Oh, were you? Oh, amazing.
Because we did the thing of like Instagramming. We were at the thing and we were like, yes, we're at the same thing at the same time. that also happened with... Ron Swanson, man.
Oh, yeah. We've got to stop meeting at famous men's shows in London.
back to Les Mis. I mean, Josh, what are your thoughts on it generally?
I start off, every time I watch it, I feel like I start off hating it. And as it goes on, I still hate it. But I get into it in a way that... By the end, I'm kind of like, yeah, maybe like aristocracy is bad. Maybe poverty is bad. I've been changed.
This is feeding into the modern day billionaires and like the Bezoses of this world.
Exactly. But, you know, there's a lot of aspects of it I hate, but there's a lot of things that are just like, it's quite fun. It's quite fun. I like, you know, I know this is going to come up at some point. I like Russell Crowe in this film. I really do. I think he's trying his best.
I think I'm probably with you on that. I don't think he's the worst singer in it. And he doesn't look very comfortable, but...
He doesn't look comfortable, but he's trying. He's trying.
He wears a nice blue hat for a lot of the film.
He wears a nice blue hat. He has that bit where he looks through the window and he's all sad and confused.
The meme.
The bit that I always forget about is that this is very late film, but when he kills himself...
It's really funny.
It's really funny. Because it's this really horrible, like, oh, I can't go on. My morals, like, who am I if I don't believe in the rule of law? And then, you know, like, I get it. And then he jumps off. And then Tom Hooper just decides to cut to this wide shot of a dummy just slamming into him. It's like the scene from, well,
Titanic.
It's like the Titanic hitting the propeller or like the Midsummer hammer. Like, just like... It's incredible.
But... It's like early bad staged stunts in Hollywood. That's one of the biggest things I heard, is that Russell Crowe sings really badly in this. But I thought, is he singing that badly? No one's singing. I don't think anyone's got an amazing singing, songy voice. And that's, I think apart from Anne Hathaway in that one song, I mean, Sacha Baron Cohen definitely, he's not trying to sing. He's just doing some kind of thing. So I didn't think it was about that. And I think because Jean Valjean is, Javert is the bad guy essentially in this. So if he's singing a bit gruffly, I was like, is that kind of makes sense to me? I don't know.
Apparently, because obviously I didn't realise this, but they're actually singing, which just sounds like really extreme. So because they were singing properly, they weren't allowed any alcohol throughout the whole filming. And apparently Russell Crowe quite struggled with not having access to alcohol for this. And so did What's the Chops, the only girl. No,
it's Amanda Seyfried.
Yes, Amanda Seyfried. Because Courgette, those were the two who struggled with it.
What about Gavroche? Was he?
So that's
was
probably
he,
why he was a bit
fucking creepy. Gavroche. He's my most hated part of the film. He's the little fucking child.
He's a kid.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad.
When he dies, you're like, yes.
Yes, you're like, fucking yeah. Why didn't you take him down in the first shot?
God, it generated some empathy towards the child character in it.
It is a bit of a mad cast, though, isn't it? It's just very up and down. Like, I think Eddie Redmayne is completely miscast and sings a bit like a Muppet.
Yeah.
Hugh Jackman, apparently he went for without water for 36 hours so he could kind of achieve the kind of like shrunken eye look. And Anne Hathaway refuses to talk about how she managed to lose the weight for her role because it was too extreme. And that is her real hair. I mean, this just—it's
on. It's online. No, it's online.
Is it online now?
Yeah, I know she. I know she didn't want to discuss it because she didn't want other kids to emulate what she did. But yeah, it is online as to what she did. Google kids.
Yes. Well, link in the show notes for the Anne Hathaway diet.
Yeah, you've got Anne Hathaway being like, I won't talk about it because, you know, it would be so terrible. And then you've got Christian Bale out there being like, I ate an apple and a can of tuna, kids. This is what you can do.
Oh, he did. For the Machinist.
Yeah, for the Machinist.
I love how big the cast is, though. They have Russell Crowe, Hugh Jackman, Sacha Baron Cohen, Anne Hathaway, Eddie Redmayne, Amanda Seyfried, Helena Bonham Carter. Like, there's a big cast. None of them can sing.
Well, Hugh, is it? I mean, Hugh. We've seen Hugh sing, and he's in The Greatest Showman. He can sing really well, and I've heard him singing live, and it's like he's good. But that's something about some musicals. Do you really need to sing like well? I don't know.
I think enthusiasm is mostly what you need. Like, yeah. If you can ride on enthusiasm, and I feel like Hugh has made a career out of riding off the enthusiasm.
100%. That's what he can do. That's why I think he's one of the worst singing people in this film. It's just like, you can tell he's really proud of himself, and it's just extremely mediocre. But it really works in The Greatest Showman, because it's all about like panache. But if you're trying to do like, I'm a guy who's bitter and then hiding or whatever, it just doesn't make sense to have that big bravado kind of belting singing, maybe. But I don't know.
He's always big. You're right. He's also like really enjoying it, even though he's like, oh, I'm an oppressed prisoner. He's enjoying that. He loves it. He loves pulling that giant boat in or picking up the flagpole.
He did.
His favorite things.
Yeah,
it was picking up the flagpole, giving himself away by picking up the wagon. That's the only way.
There's only one strong man in France. Yeah.
That was quite funny. That was Russell Crowe's character is an inspector, I think, in this. So that was him doing some good inspecting. Wait a minute. A mayor wouldn't pick up that cart. Like that.
I knew a guy who had your face and was also strong.
It was it not the face that gave it away, Russell? Or was it?
Sorry, guy picked something up once.
8 years ago, a man picked up something just like you.
He really hates it when people play marbles around him. He just cannot stand it.
Oh. I find myself, I was mesmerized by this film. I got to be honest. When I first watched it, I was just like, why do I love it in a way? Because it's nonsense. When Gavroche comes on the screen, I'm instantly irritated by his voice. But also, I'm also like, after that song finishes, like, oi, everybody, my name's Gavroche. I'm like, it's completely nonsense. And literally, that my Spotify best of the year, whatever it's called, was Les Mis soundtrack after that. Because I could not get enough of it. And when this is nominated, I was like, I need to listen to that soundtrack again. For me, actually, the soundtrack in isolation is probably be better than the film, because I think you get everything you want from it without having to pay attention to the screen. but I, in spite of myself, I can understand why people don't like musicals, because when you think musicals, you think this. And it's hard to take in, but also for me, it's just like, it had me at hello, it had me at 24601, it had me at the no. I stole a loaf of bread.
And I'm Jabba.
Like, why is this working? And that guy who gives him all the silver and says he didn't take enough.
That's nice.
It's very nice, but I'm still like, I don't know why I'm taken by this film. It's a magic trick. I think it's a magic trick.
Have you seen any of the other versions of Les Mis? Like, I remember a couple of years ago the BBC made a drama version. Like, every so often people try making dramatic versions that are based on just the story.
It was only a couple of years ago. I haven't seen it because I knew it wouldn't have the singing.
Yeah, so no one has. Because do you want to see a story without singing?
No,
because it's fucking... They should have called it More Miserable.
Is there anything else guys want to say before heading to the scores?
I think you guys all enjoyed it more than me. Like, I really sort of regretted picking this, you know. I thought it'd be a fun night out in the theatre, guys. I thought I'd have to come on here and apologise, but I'm glad you all found some enjoyment in it. Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, it's Tom Hooper's second best musical. That's my hot take.
As a bit of insider baseball, guys, this is... in the previous episode, Josh came on to talk about Cats, which is Tom Hooper's other musical. Mm. And if you want to hear our talking about Cats, then scroll back down the feed a bit more.
Yeah,
and there'll be Cats.
That
press play on that.
That does lead me into something I did want to ask about this. But no one here has actually seen Les Mis, have they? Like the stage.
On stage?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it on stage.
You've seen it on stage.
Yeah.
Those little asides that Sacha Baron Cohen and Helena Bonham Carter make to each other, like, they have some like little cutesy jokes that they make to each other. Is that in the musical?
I think because I saw the musical after watching the film, so I think they've retrofitted a lot of stuff from the film into the musical, and I don't think that I don't think the original versions of the film had that kind of stuff in it. In the same way, when you get the novelization of books or books change,
yeah.
Books that existed before the film changed, like, to match the film a bit more, so people get that. So I think that's... I don't remember it not being in there, but I think a lot of the stage show changed to incorporate that stuff in there.
I didn't write down the exact lines, but it reminded me so strongly.
Is it like the courgette bits and things like that?
That kind of stuff, but also it reminded me so much, just because we were just talking about it there on this episode, talking about Cats, the weird little insert shots that they have of Rebel Wilson talking to, I think his name's Robert Fairchild, who plays Monkey Strap, and it's just like they just left the camera going on them, and they say things like about Jason Derulo. They're like, oh, maybe he just got neutered, and it falls completely flat. And I'm just wondering if Tom Hooper has no idea what comedy is and thinks that every musical needs like a weird little comic thing.
Comedy side bit. Has he got comedy in his back catalogue? Danish Girl, no. Damned United,
no.
Well, with that, guys, let's head to the scores.
Hello, I'm Sam Pay.
And I'm Martin Zoltz-Austwick.
And we are the two hosts of a podcast called Song by Song, where we listen every week to a track by the musical artist Tom Waits. You might know him for his gravelly voice. Very nice. His appearance in films, but also his multi-decade spanning career involving blues, jazz, and all sorts of other kinds of experimental music.
So we're basically like a book club for Tom Waits. And if that sounds like your cup of tea, you can find us at songbysongpodcast.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of the scores are out of five. You can have decimal places if you wish. And you picked it, Sam. So we will start with you, please, with your recommendability.
I couldn't in good conscience recommend this to someone I liked. But... good one for you people who you're not so fussed about, maybe. I don't know. I think if you like musicals, I sort of would just go like, it's one of the biggest musicals of all time. Go and watch it. But for your person on the street, maybe There's other things on Netflix I'd recommend. There's other Tom Hughes musicals on Netflix I'd recommend. I think recommendability for me, this is like, it's a specialist subject. You know, if you like musicals, it's fine. It's a 2 out of 5 for me on that one.
Yeah, same. Although maybe rising to 3 out of 5, if you have a friend who really hates annoying kids, you can then be like, don't worry, one gets shot and killed. There we go. 3 out of 5.
This like made millions at the box office, like millions and millions. So I don't know. I mean, if you want to see Anne Hathaway looking a bit like an upset sexy mouse and singing, then this is the film for you. It's very long. There's a lot of singing in it. And I think if you love the musical, you're probably going to love this. I can't believe that I'm saying, like, it, you know, Cats is much better than this. I never thought I would be saying that is the better to go and see. I'm going to give it 3 though, because people do love it. And I guess if you've maybe grown up with it and the songs, then you're going to enjoy it. But it's just not directed very well, I think, is the main thing. It's just very bad.
So what was your score, sorry?
3.
I'm going to go 3.5. I think it's a hard sell, because it is literally singing for a long time. And a lot of it's quite bleak. And I think towards the end, it does drag. And this is why, in spite of myself, I don't know why I'm enthralled by it and the soundtrack. It's a really strange one. But I think people, it'd be a hard pill to swallow for a lot of people. Repeat viewing score, Sam.
I mean, I watched this once in 2012 or 2013, whenever it came out, and I watched it once again for this podcast. So once every 10 years, that's my tempo. But something that was nice about rewatching it was I noticed the end of the film, the suicide scene with Javert, it was shot at outside where I used to work as a Saturday job in Bath in Somerset. I used to work in a souvenir shop on Pulteney Bridge, selling like fridge magnets to tourists. And it overlooked this really lovely bit of water. A lovely bit of water where you could commit a suicide. So it reminded me of my Saturday job from when I was a teenager. So that was nice. but I don't know. I feel like it's a 2 out of 5 on this one as well.
Josh.
Yeah. How many times have I seen that? I think this is either second or third watch. And I do get swept up in it, but like there's never going to be a time that I'm like, oh, you know what I fancy today? Les Mis for 3 hours, like, or for the best part of 3 hours. So like, yeah, I think that's maybe a 2. Once a minute, I'm having an all right time, but I would never seek it out. So yeah, 2.
Helen.
You know, this was meant to be 4 hours, like, originally.
What?
Like, 4? Rumors are 4 hours. So we.
But that's how long stage shows are.
Might be better at 4 hours. Cream. Like, yes, true. You get an intermission, a toilet break, and yeah, a little ice cream.
Hold on. What kind of situations do you live at home where you can't pause your own Netflix?
I mean, my version of Netflix doesn't have a pause. What? Have I been missing this all these years? I just watched them straight through. No, that is true. But it's more exciting to go to the theatre, Lavi, right, than your home one?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You'd have to clean up afterwards. Splash everywhere.
Unless it's the Barbican, like, fucking hell, their toilets. The worst. I think I got everything I wanted from this on my soul watch, so a 1 for me.
Is this your only time watching it?
Yeah, I didn't see it at the cinema, and I've never gone, I really should see this, and I've never been kind of curious to see it. I don't know why.
I'm going to go for a 2 here. I've only seen it twice. Probably will see it again. I think once every 10 years makes sense. But I do listen to the soundtrack a lot. So I think I'll just keep on listening to that. Small screen score, Sam.
I don't know. I think I enjoyed this as much on the small screen as I did at the cinema. So I guess that's quite a good small screen score.
Yeah.
I... I think it works just as fine at home as it does at the... It's not like a big sing-alonger type thing like Rocky Horror Picture Show. You know, you're not dancing in the aisles for Les Mis, I don't think. although maybe you are when you're just listening to the soundtrack. I'm going to go 3 out of 5 for this one. I sort of feel it kind of works fine either way, or doesn't work fine either way, depending on how you your outlook on life.
Josh?
Yeah, I think a 3. I think a 3 is right. It's perfectly serviceable on a small screen. I feel like it would have been perfectly fine on a big screen. Not much difference, apart from you would have been able to see like really far up Hugh Jackman's nostrils, which would have been exciting. So you miss out on that slightly unless you sit very close to the TV. But yeah, it's all fine, isn't it? 3.
Helen?
I think the reason I would have wanted to have seen it at the big screen is I would have wanted to see who these people are who were going to see it repeatedly again and again. Like, who are these people?
Well, so you wanted to not just go to cinema once, you just wanted to stand outside the room and like tally the people. Have you been before? Is this your second time?
You get a club card stamp when you go and see it.
Sick being free.
Yeah, you get some baguette with it or something.
It's interesting what people go back to repeat view films about before, isn't it? Because, I mean, that's why The King's Speech was so big, because people who didn't go to cinema went to see it because they thought, you know, The King, but also people watched it multiple times. And like Titanic was huge because people went to see it loads of times. Mm. This for me, yeah, it is interesting. Most Marvel films I've seen at least twice in the cinema because... Why the fuck not? Because it's a bit better. But yeah, this to go see it twice in the same run, I don't know.
I think if you like the soundtrack, it's like going to see your favorite band. And I think that's why people go to watch it multiple times. You know, like, I want to go and hear the songs again on the big screen whilst I still can. You know, last chance to see. I think that was maybe the compelling reason, but it didn't resonate with me.
Small screen score, Helen.
I can give it a 5. I think it's fine on your home screen. I don't think... Yeah, I mean, would people sing along in the cinema on this one? It kind of feels that the songs, to be able to sing along to it in the cinema, like, you'd really need to belt it out because... Mm-hmm. Feels a bit like that. So yeah, 5. Watch it at home and sing along if you want to.
I could definitely imagine Prince Charles coming on and doing like a fancy dress Les Mis. And I think the people you get to will be more the drama kids, though, rather than just the people who come off the streets thinking, oh, Pitch Perfect, sing along. Yeah, I'll have a go. I think it'll be a different crowd, but I'm sure they'd still get a bunch of people who'd be interested in doing it. I totally enjoyed it a lot more in the cinema than I did on the small screen, so I'm getting it for 2.5. Engagement score, Sam.
So I watched the whole thing. I was doing a lot of thinking about my life choices during the film, but I didn't like have to pause it or sort of, you know, wander off or anything. Once it starts, it is quite a compelling watch, but maybe not for the reasons the filmmakers intended there. And I also think because it is a really star-studded cast over a long period of time, and some people aren't in it for a whole bunch and some people don't come in it until later on, there's always something new to entertain you when the time jumps and Russell Crowe's uniform changes slightly. that's quite juicy, that stuff. So maybe a 4 for that one. Like, just didn't really enjoy the movie as a piece, but I think it was reasonably engaging to watch, if not for the... just the anticipation of how haggard Hugh's going to look in the next scene.
Josh?
I agree. I think it's really engaging. Like, Tom Hooper's vision of creating such a rich fantasy world of France
is just
wonderful.
It's like going to Café Rouge.
Yeah. exactly. You're completely right, Sam. Like, it does have all those different sections that sort of drive you through the film, and for me it's like, oh, when's Javert gonna show up again? That'll be nice. Or you know, I wonder what
Josh is standing Javert. Yeah.
Javert. Or like, which Helena Bonham Carter character has Tim Burton lent out to this film today? Like, it's just, yeah. But I did have to watch this film over 4 viewings because I have a very terrible attention span, and yeah, I did feel a slight betrayal, Sam, when I saw that you were being courted for this film and you chose the longest possible film on Netflix. So yeah, I don't know. Engagement score, I think a 3 again, because, you know, bad, but I will sit through it. I will.
Helen, bad, but we'll sit through it.
It's quite an exhausting watch. It's quite exhausting watching it. I mean, it's really miserable. And it's really hammy as well. And, but you know, you kind of get through it. Yeah, 3, I think, for engagement for me.
Yeah, I'm going to go for a bit higher. I'm going to go for 4.2. Mm. And that is, at the end, I think it does really drag. After Cosette and after 2, 4, 6, and 1 saves Cosette's betrothed, I can't remember what his name is, Eddie Redmayne, then it kind of keeps on going for a bit longer. And I'm just like, I don't care that much anymore. Once Gavroche is dead, once the barricade's been taken down, it just kind of peters out for a while. But up until that, you know, I'm up until Gavroche gets shot, I'm in it.
Highlight, that's the pinnacle. They also never get into like how every single wound on Eddie Redmayne's body is irreversibly infected after Jean Valjean throws him, like fucking yeets him into a sewer. Like,
it's for his own maybe good. It's just no way. Yeah, I mean, that's quite gross.
All fine.
Anyway, that gives an overall score of 2.88750. I am astonished that this score's lower than Cats. But that's how our system scoring system works. Well, there you go. Oscar-winning Les Mis scores scores less than Cats on Flixwatcher Podcast.
The people just don't know what they're talking about, and we clearly do.
Yeah, exactly. Do you hear the people saying, don't give a shit?
Guys, Josh, Sam, can you sign off by telling everyone where we can find you online, and we'll say goodbye to everyone listening.
I have been Josh, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd at PAPSBY, at PAPSBY, that's at Papsby, that rhymes with Gatsby. And you can also keep up with the podcasts that I am sporadically doing with my co-host Jack Gregson at True Hat Mad on Instagram and Twitter.
I've been Sam. You can find me on Twitter at Sam_Clements and my pod endeavors at the 90 Minutes or Less Film Fest. And you can just find it on wherever you're listening to this. Type in 90 Min Film Fest or something along those lines. We will not be talking about Les Mis because it's about twice as long as a 90-minute film should be. But maybe there's other Russell Crowe and Hugh Jackman films we can find. We will see. And if you do like long films, do check out the holiday season, because that is a very lengthy Christmas romantic comedy, which we've been talking about on that show.
I've just followed. I need to up my game on Letterboxd this year. So, Josh, I've just followed you. So, ooh. Yeah, I need to start tracking my films better. I'm going to start following you and commenting on the films that you watch. Well, I might not do that.
I'm obsessive about it.
I got addicted to it last year. I love it. It's okay. Unhinged on there.
Well, thanks so much, guys, for joining. It's been a pleasure talking about Les Mis again.
Cool, thanks for having
us. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on.
Bye.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of Flixwatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixwatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at Flixwatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell him Flixwatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.